I love rich people. I hate rich people. I think it's sort of how a lot of us feel. And Evan Bramstedt wrote about this in the Star Tribune today as the Minnesota Star Tribune published their list of CEO pay, which will, Evan, it, I mean, most people, it will make you a little sick. It's crazy.
It is pretty crazy. There's a lot of money every year. We do this. We put together the data that comes out every spring. Companies have to disclose this. The investment rules require it, and so we just, you know, many companies here in Minnesota, based here in Minnesota, and we've been doing this for many years. We just take a look at the data and rack it up
and
just
put it up, right? Yeah. And you know, these numbers always get a little complicated, right?
Right.
Because you have different. And stock options and
right.
different benefits, whatever. The bottom line is we have a complicated relationship in America, in Minnesota, with CEO pay, which is sort of what you were exploring, right?
Yeah, that's so you know that I like to write about the trade-offs a lot when in my column, you know, on almost any issue, because nothing is ever really black and white. You and I have talked about this before.
Right.
We find our way into the gray quite a lot. And so it is with the perceptions of wealth, right? Because, yeah, we put the headline of something like, we all want to be rich. We're also wary of the rich, you know?
Yeah,
and so there's actually a great new book out about this topic called The Haves and the Have-Yachts by another journalist named Evan Osnos of The New Yorker. And I had just read it. And you know, this package came together, you know, at the Star Tribune. And I thought, oh, you know what? I should just put my thumb right on this duality that we all have.
Well, and we just all sort of watched with equal, well, maybe not equal amounts of fascination and disgust, the
Bezos
wedding.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean...
Which had a lot of yachts.
It had a lot of yachts.
Yeah.
And I always think about this in Minnesota, that in Minnesota, we have wealth. But when you talk to Minnesotans who have moved to L.A. or even Naples, Florida,
right.
Or New York City, our wealth is sort of adorable compared to, like, the real wealth.
Yeah, I spent...
Which is all very far from what regular people are.
Right. I spent the early part of my career in Dallas. Mm-hmm. And Dallas wears its wealth very much on the sleeve in a way that really would make Minnesotans blush, you know. And I always found that so fascinating. The Dallas Morning News, for instance, had a weekly feature called Fashion Dallas. This is back in the 90s and early 2000s. And, you know, that never happened at the Minnesota Star Tribune. There was not any sort of paying of attention to the ups and downs of fashion, you know, here in Minnesota and stuff. And so, this was a place, Neiman Marcus, the big Dallas department store, didn't last very long when it came up here to the Twin Cities. Saks Fifth Avenue, less than 20 years. You know, Saks off Fifth lasted, but not the main department store.
Yeah, there's sort of a Minnesota, I find it to be a little fake, this fake modesty where you hide... You keep your fancy car in some garage in Chanhassen, and you keep your less fancy car in your driveway. But we as Americans, you cited a statistic that had a crazy amount of Americans who actually say they want to become a billionaire, which maybe gets the heart of why we have this complex.
It's almost like equal parts wanting and revulsion. Like it was a Harris poll done last fall, and it said, I've forgotten the precise amount, but it was somewhere around 65-70% want to be billionaires. And then almost the same precise number replied, yes, I agree to the statement, billionaires are not making America better off or something.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I
do think there is a little bit of an American dream scenario where even if you look at the rich and you say, you know, I don't know, I believe in capitalism.
I do too.
But I also am concerned that the way that capitalism is playing out today is not the way that it's supposed to play out. That the successes of our businesses and of our wealthy are not being shared because we're a service economy. We don't need to pay the employees to be able to go and buy the kitchen table that you're producing.
Right.
So you end up with this sort of screwed up system where all the money's going to Wall Street. At the same time, like, I do admire people who built these businesses and are putting their butt on the line for... So How mad can I be about it?
And I admire the people who are leading the businesses, frankly. You know, this morning, the Minnesota Business Partnership, which is the group of CEOs, had an event at Medtronic's headquarters, and they rang the opening bell for the New York Stock Exchange. And so...
There was
15 to 20 of our CEOs there, and it was a great opportunity to meet and chat with them informally and everything like that. And when you encounter folks like this, you realize they are there for a reason. You know, they are smart people. And they are exceptional leaders. They have certain skills that I do not possess, you may not possess. And so it's very, very rare have I met a CEO who I thought, oh, what is that guy doing? Or what is that woman doing? Yeah. You know, they don't really belong in that position. I mean, folks are generally in these roles because they have certain skills and gifts, you know.
This is a political debate, of course, around the country right now.
Yes.
And we especially see it playing out in New York City. But to a lesser degree, I think we see these same sort of tensions playing out here in our cities, in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and the way that our regular people are sending some people who identify as Democratic Socialists into our city councils. And so this isn't just an abstract debate, right? Because this debate about what we do with the rich really underlies a lot of our political discussion today.
Absolutely. And as well, I always go back ultimately to the notion of growth and the notion that we want to still have some level of economic growth, because that's how everybody gets lifted up. If you don't have any economic growth, the only way to help poor people is to take money from the wealthy people. And they don't want to, they're not going to allow that, basically, you know. And ultimately, that's where this starts to play out in politics, is how close do we get to that extreme?
And it's a concern here where you say, are we driving away the people who are paying the most in taxes?
Correct.
Not that we need to kiss their butt, but we also don't need to kick their butt,
no.
I think. Like, it's sort of that balance.
Right. And ultimately, I think in a way, this is a kind of a nice problem to have, because the opposite of the problem is to be in a place where you have no opportunity to become rich, or you have no opportunity to shine a light on power and challenge power. And there are plenty of countries like that around the world where this tension that we're talking about, this back and forth, is actually a nice thing to have in a society.
Evan Ramstad is with us. When you look at this list that the Star Tribune put out today, you know, I think about this, and our listeners who know that I am a member of the Second Harvest Heartland Board.
Sure.
And a community conversation has been taking place in some sectors, some corners, about what is the right amount to pay a nonprofit CEO?
Right.
And it is interesting, because you do have this sort of ethical conversation. It plays out more in the nonprofit world, which, you know, personally, I think is sort of unfair. It's not like running a nonprofit means that you're taking a vow of poverty.
Nor are the challenges that much different running a nonprofit than a for-profit company. I mean, you still have all the trade-offs that you face in prioritizing costs and constraints and opportunities. And so, that's exactly right. Now, there are differences in nonprofits and for-profit companies. And one of them is the board of a for-profit company actually has is very focused on the fiduciary duty of returning investment, returning capital to the people who have provided capital, right? And
the Wall Street side of it,
the investor side of it. So that's really what a board is doing. That's really the oversight of a board of directors of a for-profit company.
Right.
Your role at a nonprofit can be much broader. You, on a board of a nonprofit, you can, we want you to be efficient, but also, hey, maybe y'all should look at this opportunity, or maybe you should be doing this. And so it is quite interesting
different.
To see what, yeah.
There was a time where there was really a movement to try to rein in CEO compensation. It feels to me, I'm curious for your take, but it feels to me like that is gone. You don't see much conversation about that anymore.
No, you really don't. I mean, it's coming. And for me, as a columnist, this is actually the first time. I'm now in my third year as a columnist in the business section, and so this is the third time that I've had the opportunity to offer some commentary on the on our survey. And my predecessor, Lee Schaefer, did it for 9 years. And Lee and I were talking recently about, like, it was very hard for him to come up with something new to say because, you know, this conversation, as you say, has been going on for 20, 30 years. Oh, CEOs are paid so much. It's adding to inequality in the
250
country.
250-to-1 ratio between the average pay, whatever.
And then we're getting no change.
Ecolab is 327-to-1.
Right.
You know, just scrolling through some of this. XL Energy, 99-to-1.
And there's
what
no,
does this mean? I don't know, but it sounds bad.
Well,
it?
There's no real change ultimately, and yeah. and it's of course from the CEOs and the board's point of view, they're all looking at their competitors and their rivals, and they're saying, well, we got to keep up, otherwise, you know, how are we going to get the right talent? And this pervades, you know, not just at the very top, it goes down through the ranks and everything. So yeah. It's a kind of a spiral that goes on.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like, I don't know if people just got frustrated with the fact that nothing changed, and so it's not so much of an issue anymore, or what?
Well, a bit of
this
that.
This was like a shareholder activism type thing,
right? And then they created the say on pay vote, what's called, and what happened was. So the top, a say on pay vote is where at an annual meeting, all the investors get a vote on whether the compensation to the top executives has gotten out of hand. And you never see the right. investors voting, yes, it's gotten out of hand. So there was a remedy created, and then the remedy never really produced a difference.
It is a fascinating phenomenon, uniquely American, maybe not, but definitely it lives here.
It lives here. It happens in other countries, but it doesn't. I lived in Asia for 10 years, and the scrutiny of the high pay in Hong Kong where I lived and in Seoul where I lived was there as well. But again, not really ever changing.
Evan Ramstad, a business columnist for the Minnesota Star Tribune, a really good piece today. Lots to chew on and think about. We appreciate it. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Jason.
Drive Time back in just a minute here on CCO.